Sometimes, no matter how hard you try to move on, the past manages to stay right behind you, chasing you like a shadow. It's not that all of her life was difficult, but a lot of it certainly was. She and her husband had been part of that early wave of settlers in central Illinois who tried to make a life for themselves in the newly formed Peoria County. Peoria was the name of a local tribe of Native Americans. It most likely meant something along the lines of dreaming with the help of a bad spirit. But this frontier life wasn't for everyone. It was hard work, each and every day. The trade-off, though, was the beauty of the countryside. So despite the challenges, life seemed to be all right for Andrew Gray and his wife Mary. And then, Mary's brother died. He'd lived in the area, and as a result, his grown son was able to travel to Peoria and move in with the Grays. That's not the sad part. Family should always stick together, I think, so there was some potential there for a good change. But the nephew brought a laundry list of problems with him. He was lazy and had a knack for getting into trouble. He also loved to drink and was drunk so often that sobriety was the more rare state of mind for the young man, which of course led to all sorts of bad relationships and troubles with the law. Mary Gray's nephew, it seems, had made a hobby out of getting arrested. It's easy to look at someone like that and say, "That's a quick way to ruin your life, son." And I can't agree. But behavior like that has a way of damaging the people around a person as well. For the Grays, that damage was financial. Every arrest led to a court date and a lawyer. Lawyers need to be paid. So as the arrests added up, what little money Andrew and Mary had slowly began to vanish. But it was clear their nephew wasn't going to stop just because they ran out of money. So Mary made a foolish decision. A young lawyer had recently moved to the area and had set up shop in a small shack at the edge of town. His name was Davis, and while he lacked a lot of real-world experience, he was friendly, bright, and eager to do the work. And Mary approached Mr. Davis with a proposal. Take on the criminal defense of her nephew, and if she failed to pay the fees, her house and property would be his. Davis wrote up the necessary paperwork for the agreement, and they signed it on November 10th, 1847. And then they crossed their fingers, which never works, by the way. The Gray's nephew was soon arrested again, and the Grays failed to pay the fees, and the attorney took possession of the house and land. Rather than admit defeat, though, Mary played dumb. "What agreement?" she said. I don't know what her strategy was. Maybe she thought she had the only copy of the trust deed. Perhaps she failed to tell her husband about the shady deal and didn't want to admit guilt in front of him. Whatever the reason for protesting it, though, she lost, and the Grays were asked to move out of their home there on Monroe Street. That's when things got worse. Mary told her nephew to leave them and never come back. A few days later, his body was found floating face down in the Illinois River. And that was enough for the Grays. They packed up what little they still possessed and moved out of town, but not before Mary stepped outside of the home she no longer owned and raised an angry hand to the sky. "May this land turn to thorns and thistles," she screamed, "with ill luck, sickness, and death to everyone who lives here." And then she left town for good. Davis tried renting the house out for a while, and soon after the Grays left, a new couple moved in. It was Thomas Ford, who had recently finished a four-year term as governor of Illinois. Legend says that Thomas and his wife Frances died of grief shortly afterwards, but in reality, it was cancer that took her life in 1850, and her husband followed her 3 weeks later, a victim of tuberculosis. Neighbors were quick to point out the ominous nature of their death. Mary had called for ill luck, sickness, and death for anyone in the house, and the Fords fit that bill perfectly. After the Fords died, Davis decided that life as a landlord was a lot of work, and he was already a busy man. He left the house empty, and it eventually became overgrown and run down. Legend says that the yard was filled with thistle bushes, fulfilling another element of Mary Gray's curse. It's hard to believe, but it seemed as if Mary's words had a deathly grip on the place. But sadly, it wasn't ready to let go just yet. Davis soon abandoned his claim and moved out of town. In 1865, a local business owner bought the property from the township and then gifted it to one of his former slaves, a man named Tom Lindsay. Lindsay worked hard to improve the house and property, but after lightning struck the home and the resulting fire burned it to the ground, neighbors approached him and told him about the curse. When he rebuilt the house, it's said that he buried a charm beneath the front doorstep and hung horseshoes throughout the home, which seems to have worked, actually. For the next 25 years or so, no new tragedy fell on the house there on Monroe Street. After Lindsay passed away, a local banker bought the house and land and immediately tore the modest home down and the horseshoes with it. He wanted something grand, and so he built a Victorian mansion there. He married a younger woman, and they settled into their life there in the house, completely unaware of the words that old Mary Gray had uttered 50 years before. 18 months later, the man's wife and newborn child had tragically died. He mourned them. He lived there alone for a time and eventually married again. Soon after, he and his wife welcomed a son. But when the son died of illness soon after, the banker's wife became so sick with grief that she was sent to a hospital to recover. She never came home. The house became a boarding house for a while, but after a number of deaths on the property, it was eventually abandoned. Finally, in 1895, the property was bought by the town for the construction of a new public library. The banker's mansion, along with all those dark memories and the echoes of his tragic loss, were all torn down and covered with earth. But remember, that was cursed earth. Mary had uttered powerful words that day in 1847, in a town whose name literally meant to dream with the help of a bad spirit. It's hard to ignore the connection. But you would think that all those decades had put some space between the curse and the people who lived there. Sadly, that doesn't seem to be the case. Before 1924 was over, the library had lost three directors to tragedy. The first, E.S. Wilcox, was killed when he fell in front of a moving streetcar in 1915. His successor died of a heart attack right inside the library during a board meeting. And after him, Dr. Edward Wiley took over, but he died in 1924 after intentionally swallowing arsenic. Not everyone suffered so much, though. That young attorney, David Davis, went on to become a U.S. senator, then became an associate justice for the U.S. Supreme Court. He even worked for a time as the campaign manager for Abraham Lincoln. Today, the original Peoria Public Library is gone. It was replaced in 1966 with a more modern structure. Still, even with all that glass and steel, some echoes of the curse remain. No one else has died, but past employees have reported hearing voices after the doors are locked, cold drafts when none of the windows are open, and the occasional appearance of a man dressed in turn-of-the-century clothing, staring back at them from a basement doorway. As I said before, no matter how hard we try to move on, sometimes the past manages to stick around, following us like a shadow. And for the people who lived and worked in Mary Gray's Monroe Street lot for the last century and a half, it seems there will be no escape.